Hello, everyone, and welcome to the call today. Today is July 13th, 2011, and we're going to talk about. Are we still there?
Hello, yeah, we're still here.
Hold on. All right, so we're still here talking about the call about influence, persuasion, negotiation. We're going to take your calls and your information today. We're going to talk a little bit about association triggers today. Remember, we are recording the call. It is available at whywhypersuasion.com, whypersuasion.com. And this is the call where we just talk about kind of a tool, something you can apply this week. Take your questions and help you take things to the next level to help you out. And one of the 12 laws of persuasion, you guys can break in anytime with any questions or comments that you have, is the law of association. Now, the laws of persuasion, they kind of, I guess they do work every time. And this is the interesting one as far as really understanding persuasion and influences. Association triggers. Now, we have to remember all the time that up to 95% of all persuasion involves a subconscious trigger or a feeling, and we have to be aware of our surroundings, what's around, that when we talk about association triggers, we link objects and feelings and symbols with feelings and memories. So there's a few things we want to talk about here that will help you out to really understand how things work. Now, one that's really interesting that a lot of people don't even think about is understanding, for example, smell. Now, remember with an association trigger, when you meet someone for the first time, the first 30 seconds, it's I like this person, I don't like this person, I trust this person, I don't trust this person. It's a feeling we have. Now, smell is a very interesting one. Our olfactory system, our smell, is we can smell something and all of a sudden we can go back 20, 30, 40 years. And smell does affect our ability to persuade. In fact, one of the big complaints with persuasion is people wear too much perfume and cologne. And we always recommend that people smell like they've taken a shower, obviously. But with association, most people wear too much perfume and cologne. Now, if you're going to a nightclub, perfume and cologne is a good thing, but I'm talking just about general persuasion. Here's what the studies show. Cinnabon store, the cinnamon rolls, those that can smell the Cinnabon, the cinnamon rolls, are more likely to donate to a charity. On the flip side, offensive odors, people that smell of a BO or have negative smells, have a harder time to persuade. Now, here's an interesting study from Stanford where they would bring people into a room and they would give them a very crumbly muffin, make a big mess. They would just want to see if people would clean them up. Half the students, it just was the normal, just the regular smell. And the other half, they put an actual kind of a Lysol or a cleaning scent smell in the air. And when they did that, students were more likely to clean up. So what does that mean to you? Well, I think the biggest lesson we can learn is we can look at a lot of these big stores that put the bakery bread in the air, Japanese companies that put floral and different type of scents in the air that increase productivity. But let's look at real estate agents. When you go to tour a home, what are they instructed to do? They are instructed to bake potpourri or cook breads even better or even cookies because all of a sudden we smell it and we're home. We can smell chlorine, we can smell all these other things, and all of a sudden it transports us back. But smells do matter. Isn't that amazing? Smells matter in the world of persuasion and influence. That's one thing that we can take a look at that's easily fixed with smells. Another one, when we talk about the law of association, is music. This is an interesting one. I mean, think about it. You can listen to Jaws. You can listen to Rocky, you have different feelings. You can hear a song, and it's transport you back 20 years. You can hear a song, and you think about your sweetheart. Music is powerful. I mean, you can select a popular song, put it towards whatever you're doing, and it has different association triggers. We know that music can soothe the savage beast by creating instant energy and excitement. So what can we do with music? What do we know about music? Here's some examples. You go shopping in a supermarket, for example, and it has very slow music. If you really listen to the music because you slow down your pace and you shop longer. You go to a fast food restaurant, the music is much faster because they already have your money. They want you to leave sooner. An interesting thing done was with teenagers. They were loitering at this convenience store. They were loitering. They couldn't get rid of them. They called the cops. They'd leave for a second. They'd come back. So what they did is they actually put speakers on the outside where they were loitering, and they actually started playing things like Lawrence Welk and other old, very slow music, and eventually they quit loitering. So there's power in music, too, to think about music, whether it be with coworkers or people around you. Music is a powerful thing. Because the whole thing about association triggers is understanding symbols. You know, when we see a symbol, it has an automatic feeling to us. We can see skulled crossbones, and it has a feeling. We can see a crucifix, has a feeling. As a Statue of Liberty has a feeling. American flag has a feeling. Swastika has a feeling. I mean, we have all these things. These are symbols. For example, gold has a feeling of wealth. Even though it's not the most precious metal, it's the one that has the feeling of wealth. The McDonald's arches. Kids by the age of 20 months old can recognize, for the most part, the McDonald's arches. They trigger different things. We live in a very symbolic world. And the thing about associations and symbols is they bypass our thoughts and our logic, and they affect our perceptions and behaviors. That's what symbols do. It could be a stop sign. It could be a police car. All these things are symbols. We have people that say Buy American, which can be very persuasive. We have symbols, for example, that a stop sign or the police car, the skull and crossbones, a military uniform, a wedding dress are all different symbols. For example, even the symbol of a credit card. The studies show that, for example, a store that puts the credit card symbols on their door, even though they don't take them, increases their sales. We know on websites, on the final order page, when they put their symbols of the credit cards, it does increase sales. Those are symbols that mean different things to different people. So all these things come into play when we look at symbols and maybe affiliation. The symbol of a college sweatshirt. When a university team wins, more people on Monday morning will wear the sweatshirt. We know that a lot of commercials will have babies and puppy dogs. There's a certain symbol there that connects with people. We know that U.S. presidents, for example, they don't get a pet hamster or pet snake. They get a pet dog because there's a symbol there. Even the Clintons tried to get a pet cat for a while. It didn't work. They eventually getting a pet dog. For example, the Olympics. You buy into the Olympics. Companies spend billions of dollars on the Olympics, and that transfers to them. So basically, if they like you, you like them. I guess the biggest lesson there is to understand affiliation. It's a billion-dollar industry. For example, if people like, well, it used to be, it's changed. For example, people used to like Tiger Woods before he ran into his challenges. And if you like Tiger, you liked Nike. Michael Jordan, you liked the different things that he endorsed. It is a billion-dollar industry. So the interesting thing is it can backfire on you. Like Tiger Woods, it backfired on. It also backfired on O.J. Simpson. To where they, you know, bad association. I think the worst one that I ever saw was a weight loss company. We don't need to mention names here. And they found that a celebrity or someone that was in the public eye that had lost a lot of weight, and they endorsed her. The challenge was it was Monica Lewinsky. And she had lost a lot of weight. But the challenge is there are a lot of feelings, a lot of association triggers there. Eventually, they had to drop her. The one I want to point out, I want you to think about, whether you're on the internet or people walk into your storefront, is the power of color. Color wow, really? Color, does color matter? And the answer is absolutely. The studies show that 60% of an acceptance or rejection of you or a product or service can go back to the color. Large corporations spend millions of dollars to figure out what color they should use, because colors do matter. We know that, for example, for guys wearing a suit, blue and black tend to be a more credible color. We know that in fast food restaurants, they use a lot of reds and yellows because that stimulates appetites. We know that yellow, the color yellow, triggers first in the human mind. Now, what does that mean? If you put all the colors up, people would see yellow first. You might notice in your area that that the fire trucks and the fire hydrants, a lot of them are becoming yellow. Then there's even the color of pink. Now, here's an interesting one. The holding cell, this is in Seattle, Washington. There are a lot of inmates that were in confinement, were hostile and violent, and they were beating each other up. So they painted the whole holding cell pink, which decreased the violence. They painted it pink, it decreased the violence. Now, it triggered other feelings. I'm kidding. But it did decrease violence. And if you read the news, there was a locker room of a visiting football team in a stadium that was painted pink. People got very upset because colors trigger feelings. Every color matters. Even the color of pills you take. White pills are rated as less effective as black pills or less strong. That's the power of color. So you look at your website, you look at what you're doing, colors matter. Colors absolutely matter. I mean, you have to take a look at, you know, red, more anger, danger, and excitement versus yellow, as can be triggered as intelligence or hostility. Green is more prosperity and growth. Orange can be warmth and brightness. Purple tends to be more of a royal color, an authority color, versus white tends to be purity and innocence. Death can be, or black can be death or evil. Gray is more of a neutral color. Blue, very credible color, comes with truth and relaxation and harmony. Those are all colors that you can take a look at. Now, here's some interesting studies that we've seen. They brought all these people in this room with these coffee containers. It was all the same coffee, but they had four different containers, blue, yellow, brown, and red. So four containers. They said, test it out for quality. Here's what they found out. The blue was too mild, the yellow was too weak, the brown was too strong, and the red was rich and full-bodied. That's the power of colors. I mean, take a look at it. When margarine first came out, it was white. It failed. People didn't like it. They had to put food coloring in to make it yellow. When Crystal Pepsi came out, it was clear. It was clear Pepsi. It was see-through, but it tastes like Pepsi. It failed because Pepsi needs to be dark. When they came out with green ketchup, even though it tasted good, it failed. They even did studies on milk. We all buy milk. They found out if they could make the gallon containers, you know how they're clear plastic, if they make them a little yellow, that it lasts about 2 or 3 days longer. But the challenge is if you make it that yellow color, people will not buy it. Isn't that interesting? As far as we talk about colors, there's different perception of colors and how it matters. Now, another one real quick is laundry detergent. Now, a lot of laundry detergent have different color flecks in it, or even the box colors. They've done a lot of studies on this because it's association trigger. It's a feeling. Now, on one study, they had just the color of the box. One box had laundry detergent that was yellow. One, and then had other third of the group got blue boxes, and the other third got yellow and blue boxes. Now, the ones that got all yellow boxes said it was too harsh. It wasn't good for their clothes. The ones that got blue boxes says it was too weak. The ones that got yellow and blue boxes, it was just right. That's the power of association triggers. So the main lesson today is to realize is that when people meet you for the first time, the way you're dressed, those are association triggers. It could be a color. It could be a smell. It could be a word choice. It could be a music. All these things come into play, and we don't even think about them sometimes. And that's the power. Now, if you want to really enhance your product or service, you can borrow credibility from other people. We talked about endorsements, like Tiger Woods or Michael Jordan or Bill Cosby. They pay them top dollars to promote their products, because if you like Michael Jordan and he promotes underwear or he promotes whatever it is that he promotes, if you like Mike, you like the product. It is a multi-billion dollar industry. Bill Cosby endorses Jell-O and Kodak. Michael Jordan endorses Nike and Hanes underwear. And then on the flip side, people like Tiger Woods have lost a lot of their endorsements. Was it Michael Phelps, the swimmer, lost a lot of endorsements and kind of had the opposite effect. This is a billion-dollar industry. So the main lesson today is to realize these association triggers, that your smell, or even the physical characteristics of your office, or even in negotiation when, for example, two women are negotiating with each other and one has a larger wedding ring than the other, that is an association trigger that does affect the negotiations. The symbols around your office, the things that people see, all come into play. So what I recommend, what I kind of want you to take a look at, is when people come to a website or meet you for the first time, or even come to your office, is what do people see? And that's something I did recently with a variety of different people, is walk through their office to see what people would see the first time. Because you're there every day. You see it every day, but it's the first time they see it. Videotape it. Walk through it. Take a look at it. What do people see when they first come to your internet site, or they come to your office, or they see it for the first time? That's all part of an association trigger. So think about this this week. When your first impressions, when they see you, whether it be your first time face-to-face, your office, or your website, what do they see? So think about it this week. Is all those different things, from color to smell to symbols, all trigger different feelings. Music, all trigger different feelings. That's the power of persuasion. That is the tool of the week. That's what we want to start thinking about when you start working with one of the 12 laws of persuasion, the law of association. So with that, are there any questions or comments about association triggers or persuasion challenges you're running into this week?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. We're new people, and we just started reading your books on persuasion.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was reading it, I thought, you know, it's subconscious, and I'm wondering if people don't subconsciously do the right thing, wear the right clothes, because they have enough common sense to do that. Is it really important that we make a conscious effort to do that? It seems to me like it might be subconsciously some of these things are already done, because that's the human being.
I think you're kind of right down the middle. Subconsciously, we do some things that are right, and they're right on track, and maybe wear the right things. And then the other time, sometimes we don't even think about it, and we might wear or do something that repels people, and we don't even know it. So I think some of the things we are doing right, just without thinking about it, and without thinking about it, we're doing some things that aren't probably appropriate for persuasion and influence.
Okay.
Great. Is there any specific examples that concern you, or?
If we're thinking about foreclosure and talking to these people and you know, doing real estate and so forth and so on, I would think that if you have any business sense, you would do most of this stuff, maybe not the color because you don't know that so much, but most of this stuff is done automatically, I would believe.
Well, hopefully it is. Hopefully it's second nature. But, you know, with a foreclosure, for example, just the you know, color, blue is a more credible color. But, of course, you wouldn't want to go to foreclosure in a suit, okay, because the association triggers the bank, and that will have the opposite effect. So you'd want to look professional but not wear a suit. You would want to make sure you step down the step so you're not coming to that would be another a little feeling or trigger that some people might may or may not think about to
step
be able
down
to
a
talk.
Step, did you say?
Yep. Yeah, step down a step to where there's an association trigger with height. It's interesting to see that most there's a power thing about height. Most CEOs are over 6 foot. And so if you're taller than them, there's an association trigger of power, which you might not want when you first meet somebody. You might want to step down a step. There is understanding.
So that they're higher than you are?
Yeah, so they're higher than you.
Okay.
And realizing that, too, that it's human nature, especially in a foreclosure situation, that it's not their fault. Now, we know that it is, okay? But in their mind, it's they're going to blame the bank, they're going to blame the economy, they're going to blame their boss that fired them. And a lot of times, if we can just be in, if we can be the other person and not be the bank and let them vent a little bit, sometimes that goes a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And also, too, that let them finding a common enemy. If they want to blame the bank or the economy, we can both blame that, the situation. And part of that, too, I think, especially with foreclosures, is a lot of times the people, there's the ego and esteem issue, which is another law of persuasion, but they... How can I put this is that a lot of times they might lie to you. They might say something like, well, we've already taken care of it. And you know they're lying to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of human nature to say, well, you're lying to me. It might be, and they say might say something like, well, we've taken care of it. And you know they're lying. And you have to realize that sometimes it's better to say, well, I'm glad you've taken care of it. You know, can we be number two in line? Sometimes the first thing doesn't work out. We've been doing this for a while. Can we be second in line for you? Because if you call them a liar, tell them they're a liar, tell them these other things, a lot of times they'll resist you. And that's the power of kind of those understanding those association triggers and human nature. And that'll be a helpful thing to you when you're dealing with foreclosure. Because you can tell them that they're wrong, you can tell them that they're lying. That might feel good to you, but that closes the doors of persuasion where it's very difficult sometimes to persuade that person.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does.
Okay, good. Good. Any other questions out there?
Well, I notice on the clothing side of people that we might meet for any given situation, I notice that they're dressing for whatever circumstances is involved, a nice pair of slacks and a nice knit shirt for signing a contract for getting some contract work done on a house or something, you know, rather than wearing a suit of I'm power, I know what I'm talking about, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's good that you're able to see that. You want to dress up probably a couple notches than people you're trying to persuade, and it depends on the situation, and it depends on the expectation. For the most part, if you have a real estate, you want to look nice, you want to look professional, but maybe a lot of times you don't want to be wearing that suit. You want to obviously look respectable. There's the association and trigger, you know, doctors wearing the white coat. That's an association trigger for people. People in the way they dress. And so that I would not never recommend wearing a suit, especially when you're dealing with like a FSBO or a foreclosure. You probably want to dress professionally and look nice, but the last thing you want to do is drive up in your Mercedes in a suit because both of those will trigger resistance.
Yeah.
In fact, I was just talking to an entrepreneur today and working with him. He has a series of karate studios. and he drives a very, very nice Mercedes, but he does not drive that to work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people are like, oh, he just drives a very basic car to work, because otherwise they think, oh, wait a minute, that's a nice car, what's going on? And that could be a negative association trigger for them.
Right. Right.
Okay. So you just, even if you were going to, if you're going to go talk to a farmer, you wouldn't want to drive the nice car. You wouldn't want to put on your nice clothes. It's, and the key, and now the key you really need to understand here is that the biggest default setting that hurts people in persuasion is we tend to persuade others how we like to be persuaded.
Mm-hmm.
And that's wrong. We need to persuade others how we like to be persuaded.
What if the person is coming to someone that they're expecting to help them? Would you still not wear your suit? Would you still dress the same way as you try to dress like them instead of trying looking a little superior, since they think that you're really going to help them, give them money and such a thing as that?
I'd say a couple notches above them. Notches above them is a good thing, to where you're not repelling them, but you're still having that credibility.
Okay.
Definitely. Good questions. Any other questions? All right. Well, we'll be here again next week. Now, we'll post all the recordings on ywhypersuasion.com. There's also a Q&A form on ywhypersuasion.com if there's any questions that you have or things you want to hear on the phone call. And, again, the key is to give you a tool of persuasion, give you something to apply, and then make it part of what you do. So everyone have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Kurt.
You bet. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.